You're listening to Voice Acting Mastery, episode number 23.
Welcome to the Voice Acting Mastery podcast with Crispin Freeman. VoiceActingMastery.com is your place to learn both the skills and the mindset you need to become a professional voice actor, even if you're just getting started. In each episode of this podcast, you'll discover valuable tips, tricks, and insider information to help you portray characters in animation, video games, and beyond. And now here's your host, voice actor Crispin Freeman.
Hi there, my name is Crispin Freeman, and I'll be your guide through the world of voice acting. If you'd like to know more about me, feel free to check out my personal website at www.crispinfreeman.com. In my last podcast, I discussed the five essentials for voice acting. I talked at length about the first of those essentials, the need to become an actor. I also said that of all the different acting training I've had the pleasure of experiencing, the one that helped me the most in my voice acting career was improvisational acting. So I thought I would invite my improv teacher, Melanie Chartoff, on the podcast to talk about the importance of improv and how it relates to voice acting. Melanie has had an extensive acting career, both on stage and on screen. But those of you who follow animation will probably be most familiar with her performance as Dee Dee Pickles, the mother in the famous Nickelodeon series, The Rugrats. Melanie has taught me a lot, and I think you'll benefit from her insight and experience. So without further ado, here's Melanie.
And now, the feature segment.
So, welcome to the podcast, Melanie.
It's pleasure.
A pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
I'm really excited that I've gotten the chance to talk to you and interview you, because as I tell all of my students when I'm teaching them, the two most important things that have helped me in my voice acting, besides obviously learning how to act, but the two sort of skills that I can point to are singing and improv, and especially improv. Whenever you talk to voice actors, they will say over and over again how important improv is. And you have been one of my seminal, you know, central improv teachers. And so I really wanted to get you on the podcast and chat with you about improv. Mm-hmm. But before we dive into improv, I want to introduce you to my audience a little bit. So do you mind telling us a little bit about your background as an actress and what attracted you to it, what inspired you to get into acting?
A need for attention, a desperate need to keep my parents from fighting, a need to keep the kids in class from attacking me. It was a defense mechanism. Being funny and performing to get myself out of jams was a survival tactic. And then it became an amusement and a career. I started at Yale University when I was in high school. Whenever they needed a young girl, I would be in their plays. And then I got a small scholarship to a college near New York City, which was optimum for me because I could get on the train, go to New York, and see what theater was really like. It wasn't necessarily like what my professors were telling me. And I studied with Uta Hagen, with Stella Adler, with some of the greatest teachers. I continue to study when I can now with a gentleman here named Harry Mastro George, who I highly recommend. But it went from being a need for attention to being an escapist mechanism. I found that in acting, I could get outside my own mind and just disappear, kind of like an acid trip might be, or I imagine an acid trip might be. I just would completely disappear into another identity, and I just love that, and I still do.
Wow. Mm. And so you were growing up in Connecticut, obviously near Yale University.
Yes.
And that must have been really helpful to have the professional, both have access to Yale University and their sort of prestigious drama school, but also to have access to New York City where you could go see sort of the creme de la creme of Broadway production and acting.
Indeed, and also in New Haven, Connecticut, it was where they tried out plays, the Schubert Theater, the Long Wharf Theater, which I interned and was in the children's company. I got a real early sense of what theater and terrific acting was like. And then I did the off-Broadway scene. I did improvisation, actually, off-Broadway with a company called The Proposition, starring Jane Curtin and Josh Mostel and other luminaries from Cambridge and Boston area. And we did live, on-the-spot musicals based on audience suggestions. We had templates. There were certain chord progressions that we knew that we would be filling in, and we would get an audience suggestion about a location or a political topic, and we would just create an entire evening's musical. And it was a great way to be inducted. I had great playmates, and I had great teachers. And then I was on Broadway. I did a couple of Broadway shows. I also did a stand-up act, from whence I got hired to do a late-night comedy show out here. And that's when my career in L.A. began.
Was that the Fridays show?
It was called Fridays. Michael Richards, Larry David were some of the luminaries involved. And it was a very edgy show. We did a lot of absurd, breaking the fourth wall stuff. Sometimes seemed like a preliminary reality show in that we actually got involved with breaking the wall to the extent where people at home really believed that Andy Kaufman was in a fight with some of our crew members. This is back in the day.
Yeah.
So it was a very exciting time. It was very exciting to be a part of. And since then, I've been a series regular on some on-camera shows. I also got to be the mom and the grandmom on the Rugrats cartoon, which has served me well, hence my house. Thank you, Rugrats. And yeah. All Grown Up, it's spinoff, and we have several films also. Action figures, video games. It's been a great market for me.
Pat Fraley, when he got cast in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as the villain as Krang, he called his house Casa de Krang.
That's great. Pat's wonderful.
Before we dive into the Rugrats and the voice acting, I just want to clarify, because it's usually an important topic for my listeners. How were you taking acting classes when you were in high school and college, or was this something you were doing outside of school?
I found that the college professor situation was dim. They were not educated about real theater. They were dilettantes who'd only worked as college professors. So I had to start my training, for me, all over again when I went to New York. Other schools may be different. They may have imported actual actors and people who have worked in the theater who have a much more realistic grip on the trenches of what theater is really like. So I'd say my studies in New York were my launching pad. And I hadn't ever studied voice acting, but I had studied, like you, singing. I'd studied opera. I'd done a lot of Broadway singing. I had a very rangy voice, which served me well. And in New York, when I first started doing voiceovers, I was hired to do characters a great deal. They would hire me to do Elaine May, who was a comedian at the time, a very, very well-known improvisational comedian. And I could do her very well, so they would bring me in to imitate her. Someone would imitate Mike Nichols, who was her improvising partner on Broadway. So that was how I began. And I think that Rugrats was one of my very first animation auditions, lucky me.
Nice.
It was.
So do you approach voice acting different from your other acting?
I do, because in voiceover, it's completely green screen, as you know. You have to imagine everything, even your own hand, as a cartoon. You don't imagine that you're going to see. You're not going to see other humans like you might on the set of a film or a television show or in a stage play. You are imagining the entire visual world, and sensorily as well. You're pretending to be carrying a baby, in my case. You're expressing all the physicality necessary for the character, even though you're not able to do it because you'll move off mic. So it is a very challenging kind of work, actually.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, as you yourself must know, a lot of the actors are not working with you on the day you're recording. You're recording imagining the other actor and how they might read the line to you. So you respond three or four different ways, as if in, you know, answer to the way they're speaking.
So when you were recording the Rugrats, did you record separately or as a group?
We recorded the husband and wife together. I played a character named Dee Dee Pickles, who spoke this way. And my husband was played by Jack Riley, who had a wonderful kind of flat, vulnerable monotone. And we did most of our scenes together. Occasional group scenes. And sometimes when Jack was working or doing something else, I would just go in and record on my own. After a few years, I understood how he might deliver a line. It was pretty easy to react.
Yeah, that was something that happened to me recently in Young Justice. I play Speedy, who is Green Arrow's sidekick, and eventually I become Red Arrow. And there was this very important episode where it was nothing but Green Arrow and Red Arrow talking to each other, and the actor, Alan Tudyk, couldn't be there that day. And so I had to do this entire very emotional episode with no scene partner and have to sort of trust the director that, okay, hopefully this is all going to mesh together well and sound beautiful once it comes out the other side. But
it's great to have such a well-honed imagination that you can create that character in your mind's eye.
Yeah.
That's the knack of voice acting.
So I find that improv is incredibly important when it comes to voice acting. What's your opinion, Melanie?
What am I going to say? No. I think it's urgent. I think it's very important to be trained, stage trained and all that. But in a lot of cases, at least for the young people I'm working with these days, young people don't have a point of view. They're used to getting their point of view from source material like a full-length play, in which case you get to grow and go through the whole genesis of a character's mind. But in voiceover, you have to make a decision very quickly about who you are. It's best that it be you. And it's best that you espouse a very clear point of view so that you differ yourselves from every other person that's coming in for the spot that day.
So what do you mean by point of view exactly?
Point of view is the way you originally respond to stimuli. And it's full of opinion. It's not neutrality. If you're an announcer, perhaps, or if you're just doing introducing a television show, you might have that kind of neutrality with nothing but enthusiasm. But it's a very intimate medium voice, and I find that the people with the point of view, and this is why celebrities get so many of these big deals, are making the most money. They're doing the best. And one of the reasons I deploy improv for my students is sometimes you don't really know how you'd react until you're in an unknown situation. It forces you to react instantaneously and spontaneously, which may be the most authentic you get to be as an actor.
Interesting. So by putting people in situations that are unscripted, that they can't expect, you're basically sort of in a way requiring them to come out with their personal opinion on something.
Without any preconceived notion. Sometimes you don't know who you are until you're in danger. I certainly don't put anybody in danger, but the next best thing is the unknown, interfacing with a stranger. Sometimes I have folks playing in my class who don't know one another at all. Dealing with the unpredictable, the way you gut react, the way your emotions come into play, the way your voice goes, that's who you really are. That's the real you. It's not a postured, prepared, conceived self. It's an authentic self.
And that's interesting because I think a common misconception about voice acting is that it's about doing funny voices, which a lot of people interpret to mean I don't have to be myself. I can put on some sort of voice and be something other than myself, which in a way is, as you said, a sort of similar impetus where you had escapism when you were younger, you know. But in reality, in order to be viable, in order to be believable as a voice actor, it has to come from you. You have to be yourself, don't you?
Something has to happen to you. If nothing happens to you, it's very hard to believe the extent of adventures that you're having in these cataclysmic circumstances that cartoons and video games put us in. If you don't believe it's really happening to you, it sounds fake.
Yeah.
It sounds unreal. It sounds forced.
So in your classes, and this is the one thing I loved about your improv classes when I took them, was that it wasn't about being funny. Often people's misconception about improv is you've got to be funny on the spot. Your improv classes were so focused on being truthful and being honest in the moment. If that turned out to be funny, great. But if it turned out to be tragic, that was cool too, as long as it was believable in the moment. Is that what you focus on when you have new students coming in who maybe aren't as experienced with acting, trying to get them to be honest?
Yes. One thing I tried a couple weeks ago, I was teaching at a university with young people who were completely unfamiliar with acting or improv. Basically had them stand in a circle and say their names as if it was the best news in the world to the person to their right. A lot of them had trouble saying their names. They had name shame. It was kind of astounding. They'd say it like a question, cafe, or they'd say it as quickly as they could, as if to get it out of the way. They didn't have a great deal of pride in honoring their names. And then I'd have the person next to them receive the names into their heart, not just thanks, but thank you, as if they're touched. And it was extremely funny, but it was also extremely unpredictable and original. And you got to see who people really were just in giving their names sincerely to another human being.
What was there a common difficulty in that exercise that you found happened with a lot of people? I mean, with them saying their names. It seems funny, doesn't it, that we can't say our own name without feeling some sense of shame?
Well, it may not be true everywhere. But in this particular case, I had a lot of very shy and recalcitrant people. I asked for a show of hands for volunteers, and I took the people who did not volunteer to come up, the involunteers, as I call them, and I brought them up. And
wow.
They had a lot of trepidation about being public, which they're going to have to be on job interviews in months to come. A lot of them are going to job fairs and meeting people face-to-face off without their Facebook avatar or without their portfolio or their resume. They're going to have to deal with being in the moment. And a lot of them had trouble making eye contact as they said their name. Person receiving had a lot of trouble staying in eye contact with them as they received the name. It's a very succinct, small challenge, but your name is the essence of you. You may not think so, but it's the essence of how you can tell how a person feels about themselves by the way they say their name sometimes.
Interesting. Mm. So
go home and practice your names, everyone. Go home.
Yes, go home, practice your names. Which is funny, actually, because I became aware of that especially when I started getting a lot more voiceover auditions at home. I have to slate myself. I have to say my own name and then the character name and then into my audition. And I started to realize that it was very important how I said my name, because that was the handshake. Like, that's how a producer or a casting director is going to know what I'm on about. And if I give a weak Crispin Freeman and then go into a brilliant performance, they're not going to trust me.
Or if you throw it away, like it's not important. You have to say your name like you've got the job and you're taking over. That's one of the things that I work on in my voice class, is just getting people to slate in a way that sounds like they have the job. Not apologetic, not to just get it out of the way as fast as they can, but to really state their name like, this is a name to be reckoned with. This is my emblem. This is my signature. This is going to be my take. Pride, you know, joy in your creation.
It's clear from spending just a little time with Melanie that her ability to articulate her thoughts so succinctly comes from years of training, experience, and a deep love of the craft of acting. In the next episode, Melanie will reveal her 3-part technique for developing character voices and how she used it to create her portrayal of Dee Dee Pickles in The Rugrats. See you next time.